This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. A federal appeals court just yesterday upheld the Federal Communications Commission's decision to repeal Obama-era net neutrality rules. But the court overruled the FCC's effort to block states from adopting their own rules, and California passed one of the nation's strongest laws aimed at protecting Internet consumers and net neutrality last year. Joining us first to discuss the decision and what it means for California is California State Senator Scott Wiener. Welcome, Scott Wiener.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you. Pretty happy about this, I believe, aren't you?
Well, the overall ruling is bad because it upholds the Trump FCC's repeal of federal net neutrality protections, which obviously would be ideal to have one federal standard. But the silver lining is that the court also ruled that the FCC cannot prohibit or preempt states from stepping in to protect net neutrality. So that is a win for California.
And what does that mean in terms of what California is going to be able to do? Because we have a very strong, as I said in the introduction, net neutrality rule. Can we just simply go ahead with that?
I was honored to author Senate Bill 822, which was passed and signed into law. It's the strongest net neutrality protections in the country. I would like us to go forward and start enforcing it, but there is continuing litigation around this law. The decision yesterday, I'm fairly confident, will be appealed further, perhaps to the U.S. Supreme Court. And then we have separate litigation that the Trump administration and the big telecom and cable companies filed against the law in California that's been on hold pending this appeal. So that litigation may move forward. So we're still stuck in litigation, but to be clear, this was a big step forward.
Yeah, and California officials are still going to have to continue to prove that this law that we have in place here doesn't directly conflict with federal regulations. So the real question, I suppose, is even though there may be a lot of happiness or silver lining, as you called it, that the state can stay within the range of enforcing the net neutrality law that you were involved in, will the law survive?
Well, it'll be a big legal fight. We believe that we have strong legal grounds as a state to step in and protect consumers and protect access to the Internet, given that the federal government has decided to leave a complete void. They have this argument, the opposition, that, you can't do it at the state level because there might be different state standards. And to be clear, we would prefer a strong federal uniform net neutrality standard, but these companies went and persuaded the FCC to eliminate that standard. So they're sort of they made their bed and they have to lie in it. With that said, states all the time regulate at the state level. And those regulations are, often might be consistent with one another or might be a little bit different. And so this is a consumer protection issue, making sure that individuals can access the Internet and go to whatever websites they want to go to and not have big corporations force them to go to favored websites that are paying more money. California is a big state. And so if California and perhaps a few other big states like New York and New Jersey all go in a certain direction, that will move the entire country.
Well, I don't know if it's going to lead to balkanization, as some have been saying ominously, but right now you've got 9 states, including California, that have their own net neutrality rules, and there's another 27 states that have legislation moving in that direction.
I don't think it'll lead to balkanization. The gist of these laws is really the same. And what we're saying is that when you sign up for Internet service through AT&T or Comcast or Verizon or whoever else, those companies should not be allowed to block access to websites that they don't like or that aren't paying them enough money, should not have fast lanes and slow lanes where it's fast access to the favored websites that are paying a lot of money and slow access to the ones that aren't. It's all very consistent, and they shouldn't be doing these things to begin with. And it's a very scary situation because when you look at like AT&T purchasing Time Warner, that means that you have more and more companies that are providing the Internet service and also providing the content. So AT&T has every incentive in the world, for example, to have the CNN website be faster than the New York Times or KQED website because it's their own product. They have an incentive to steer you to their own websites, and that is terrible for an open Internet and for a democracy.
And can't they still keep things the same if they state they reserve the right in terms of service to do what they have been doing?
No, under the California law, which was modeled on the Obama-era net neutrality regulations, they are not allowed to play favorites among websites. They're not allowed to block access to websites or to have some websites that have faster or slower access. What we don't want is for the internet to turn into cable TV, where you pay a monthly fee and the corporation makes a choice about what websites or channels you're allowed to go to. We don't want the internet to turn into cable TV. We want it to be open so people can make their own choices.
Scott Weiner, again, is California State Senator. He's been involved with net neutrality for many years now. And Scott, good to have you with us. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for covering it.
And we're going to now talk with April Glazer, who's here with us in studio, technology writer for Slate. And what do you see this meaning for California, April?
Well, it means that California has the potential to really set the net neutrality standard for the rest of the country. Because, yes, other states do have laws that do force ISPs that operate in the state, internet service providers that operate in the state, to abide by net neutrality rules, which means, as Scott Weiner said, no blocking, no throttling, no charging websites a fee to access users at faster speeds. But the California law is actually stricter than all of those other ones. It actually goes farther, and it actually goes farther than the 2015 regulations that were repealed from Obama-era net neutrality rules. And the California law also, for instance, doesn't allow ISPs to engage in a tactic called zero rating, where they don't charge users against their data to access certain services. So, for instance, like with AT&T, if they give their subscribers free HBO access, you know, then they would be more likely to use HBO than, you know, another TV service. Or if, you know, Comcast, doesn't charge against, you know, accessing YouTube, then users would be more likely to go to YouTube than Vimeo. So the California law also has rules against kind of privileging how certain websites how internet service providers peer and connect to each other. So it's actually a much more stricter standard, and California has the opportunity to kind of set the bar high.
Well, Ajit Pai, as I'm sure you remember, FCC chair, said he was going to go after these regulations like with a weed whacker. And the fact of the matter is, now on a federal level, net neutrality is legally dead. Now, what does that mean? I mean, what does that mean? The bigger picture, as Scott Weiner said, Senator Weiner said, you know, there's going to be a lot of firing this out in court. But at the same time, it's got to affect us here as well. It's got to trickle down.
Yeah, at the federal level right now, ISPs can legally, block access to certain websites, slow down access to certain websites, or speed up access to certain websites, so long as they say in their terms of service that they reserve the right to do so. And they've been allowed to do this since June of last year. Now, we haven't seen this behavior really play out because they've been on very, very good behavior as we're all watching this very closely. But, you know, ostensibly, this could happen very slowly in a very sneaky way. You know, before you know it, it might take a lot longer to load the San Francisco Chronicle website than the New York Times website. And maybe we're not sure why, but it could be because the New York Times is paying a fee to Comcast to reach users faster. And, you know, this is the type of thing where we don't necessarily see the whites of their eyes, because let's face it, when a website loads slower, we navigate somewhere else. And that's why, you know, net neutrality is so important to maintain, because it affects, you know, kind of the way the information needs of our communities. If our local news websites are harder to access, if they're slower to access than other news websites, then we're not going to be getting that local information.
Well, the U.S. Court of Appeals has actually repealed net neutrality rules, but California protections may stand because states were left out of that and were exempted, presumably. There's going to be a lot of fights in courts. You may want to weigh in here, and if you do, we're talking about the federal appeals court decision yesterday that upheld the FCC's repeal of Obama-era net neutrality laws. If you'd like to weigh in here, we'd like to hear from you. If you have questions for our guest, April Glazer, who's here with us in studio, technology writer for Slate, please feel free to be part of the program. And you can do that by giving us a call right now at our toll-free number. It's 866-733-6786. Again, the number to be part of the program, 866-733-6786, or get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions or comments you might have to forum@kqed.org. But please feel free to join the program. You're invited to do that. And I want to also talk with April about what's going on with Facebook now. And that is, well, someone presumably sending a video out to what were private meetings, and all the talks about nobody's supposed to leak anything when Facebook has its private meetings almost sounds like what we're hearing out of the Trump administration. What went down here? I mean, Mark Zuckerberg is on record as saying, well, now they know how I think. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but this was not supposed to be for the public to hear. Now the public's hearing it.
Sure, it's not supposed to be for the public to hear, but the fact is that these technology companies have been leaking like sieves for the past 2 years. And it's
you think it was a deliberate leak then, maybe? Because he went after Elizabeth Warren, right?
Yeah, well, it's whether it was deliberate or not, it's hard to say. The journalist Casey, the journalist from The Verge who published this story is fantastic, and Casey Newton was able to obtain audio from an all hands meeting from Facebook wherein employees were asking Mark Zuckerberg a lot of questions, and one of the questions that came up was, what does Mark Zuckerberg think about Elizabeth Warren's proposal that would break up big tech? Elizabeth Warren proposed earlier in the year, was one of her first detailed policy proposals of her campaign, to kind of unwind and break up the various companies that make up Facebook. So that's disconnecting Facebook from Instagram and disconnecting WhatsApp from Facebook and making it a smaller company. It's an antitrust action. And Mark Zuckerberg, unsurprisingly, in this meeting, in this leaked audio that was obtained by Casey Newton, I'm sure Facebook did not mean for it to be obtained because we don't know how it got in his hands. But Mark Zuckerberg, unsurprisingly, is not a fan of this proposal. Of course, he would like his company to be as powerful as possible. So, it was very interesting to get insight into how, one of the most powerful companies in the world thinks about this very strong campaign proposal from this from a candidate that's soaring in the polls. But it certainly wasn't a surprising answer by any stretch.
He's also talking about competing with TikTok, the Chinese company, in this audio.
Yeah, he's talking about competition. He talks about the treatment of contract workers, which, Facebook depends on to moderate, hate and violence off the website. Really a range of things were discussed. And honestly, most of the answers were somewhat kind of uncontroversial, or not uncontroversial, but what one would expect a CEO to say to, his employees about kind of what would be in the best interest of the company. But by far the statement that received the most pickup in the media was his saying that he would challenge, or that Facebook would likely challenge, an attempt to break up the company in court.
Which means go after Elizabeth Warren. Really,
it means, well, go after an attempt to break it up. So
yeah.
If Elizabeth Warren tries to enact a sort of antitrust rule against Facebook and say that, Instagram has to be spun off into a separate company, that Facebook wouldn't take that, lying down, that they would go to the mat, he said.
Let's go to the calls, and we begin with you, Vishal. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning. I'm curious as to how the appeals court decision to essentially allow the states to set up their own rules, how that is even practical or possible. And I think in the dissenting opinion, one of the justices sort of points that out, that it's going to end up being the standard is going to end up being what the most restrictive rule in the most restrictive state is. So I'm curious about your thoughts on that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and that comment in the opinion does make sense. I mean, when it comes to a relatively borderless internet, it's incredibly difficult to make a separate internet for each state, right? So if California has a different set of rules, it's going to be difficult for Comcast, AT&T, and Verizon to create kind of a different standard for how the internet operates, say in New Jersey, then in Montana, then in New York. And that's why the strictest rule is probably going to be the one that sets the standard for the rest of the country. And that's why California's law is so important, because it goes very far in saying that these companies just cannot act in a discriminatory way when it comes to how we access content online.
Let me thank the caller. That was Vishal. Let me bring another caller aboard, and that's Jeffrey. Jeffrey, join us. You're on the air.
Hi. I worked in software development and communication systems for many years, and I harbor no illusions about the intentions of these providers. But you should consider that there are certain classes of internet applications mm-hmm. that require minimal latency, and they would be being offered were it possible to actually prioritize their delivery. it would strike me as unfortunate if this legislation would prevent the deployment of such applications. And I was wondering if there's anything in there which allows discrimination, basically moving packets for particular applications sort of to the head of the line in the intermediate routers so that they can maintain a minimal latency across the connection and therefore work. One can think of remote monitoring, remote telemetry, remote control type applications that right now are on a free, open, unmetered internet.
We're in the Wild West, as some put it, Jeffrey, and that's a good question. Let me thank you for it and go to April Glazer.
Yeah, I mean, we're not really in a free open internet right now. Legally, they can do whatever they want. But you're absolutely right when you say that the internet is a network of networks and that some traffic does move faster than other traffics. That is absolutely correct. And the California law, I believe, and I'm not sure the specifics of it, but would have some flexibility for that if traffic needs to move faster. It's really about consumer protection. It's about saying how consumers access websites and whether or not websites like at the end user phase, not as much as detailed when it comes to the interconnection, which you're talking about, although there are parts of the law that deal with interconnection agreements that say that, you know, Verizon can't intentionally downgrade or not maintain its network in order to force another company to pay them more to connect to users. But it's really about fairness. It's about consumer protection. And it's not about, you know, putting some really heavy line rules that's going to unintentionally cause traffic that needs to move faster for whatever reason to not do so. It's about making sure that we can access websites equally.
Let me thank Jeffrey for that call. Something I you probably know this, April, but I was struck by the fact that there are about 100 mayors across the country who have signed pledges that if contracts with the internet providers come up that violate net neutrality principles, they will go to war.
War is one way to put it. Court is another way to put it. But
litigation is war.
Sure, you could say that. This comes from a really creative move that came out of Montana in 2018, and basically the governor of Montana signed an executive order saying that any internet provider that hopes to have a government contract in the state cannot act in a discriminatory way, cannot violate net neutrality principles for any internet users in the state. And through that executive order, kind of enacted network neutrality. That is unless, any of the, major handful of major internet providers don't want to have any government contracts, which I'm sure isn't the case. And so following in those footsteps, New York did the same thing. New Jersey, Washington, Rhode Island similarly enacted laws enacted executive orders that said if you want to do business with our government, then you cannot discriminate for citizens in this state. And so the mayors of these, cities and towns likewise said in order to do business with us, with our municipalities, you have to act in a neutral way.
Another caller joining us, and that's Jay from San Jose. Good morning.
Yeah, it seems like internet access has become yet another utility, just like gas, electric, and certainly telephone service. And I'm wondering what's preventing being recognized as a public utility service that should regulate this.
Yeah, you got a little muffy in that call there, but I think he wants to know about what would prevent this moving toward utility. What would enable it, for that matter?
Right. Well, what the FCC did, Trump's FCC under Chairman Ajit Pai did, was essentially reclassify the internet not as an essential telecommunications service, but instead as information as an entertainment type service, right? So something more like cable and less like a telephone or a cell phone that you need in order to connect to people to get essential information. That reclassification means that it acts less like utility, less like a common carrier. And because of that, it's less open or it's not open to the same public interest obligations that those utilities are open to. But the caller is absolutely right in that we need the internet to apply for jobs, to know what's going on politically, to communicate locally and with our families. It's how we know where we're going and how to get there. So it's an incredibly important service. It's considered a human right by the United Nations, but it is not considered a basic utility in the United States at the moment.
April Glazer again is technology writer with Slate. She's here with us in studio. And here's Jake, who writes, the internet service providers pocketed $400 billion in American taxpayer money to create fiber infrastructure, which they did not build. Now they're using our money to lobby against our freedom of information. It's truly offensive. Additionally, It's funny how the GOP are all for states' rights until it goes against their ISP donors' interests. This is similar to their attack on the California emission laws. Now, you don't have to necessarily get into politics here, but he makes some salient points.
Yeah, you know, one thing I would add to that or jump on the back of that with is that one of the arguments for axing the net neutrality rules is that it disincentivizes investment to build out more networks or to build stronger networks and to add more connectivity across the country from internet service providers. But when we went back into those investor calls after the rules were rescinded, you know, I went back and looked at what they said to their investors. Comcast, AT&T, and Verizon all said that they had actually increased investment in their networks despite having no net neutrality rules on the books. So that was an argument that really doesn't hold a lot of water coming from the chairman of the FCC. But another thing I'll add is that a large percentage of Americans, you know, I believe over 20% of Americans still lack a reliable access to broadband internet, still don't have internet. And so we absolutely need to prioritize building better networks. And unfortunately, yes, these internet service providers have been subsidized with public funds, and they're still not serving communities across the country in rural and in urban areas that don't have reliable access.
Getting back to litigation for a moment, and it is like war in many ways. There's still going to be a lot of fights with the FCC at the state and local levels. That seems to be obvious. But Mozilla is talking litigation, and so is Facebook and Google. They filed supportive briefs. There's certainly coming litigation from the other side, too.
Yeah, you know, advocacy groups certainly are not going to take this lying down. And the net neutrality is an interesting issue area, because where a lot of advocates might disagree on Facebook when it comes to misinformation or hate speech or, you know, a whole host of problems with that platform, privacy issues. When it comes to net neutrality, the tech companies and the consumer advocates tend to agree that we need a level playing field here in order to operate, in order to not.
We don't have a level playing field.
Yes, we don't have a level playing field. And it's interesting because the Facebooks of the world and these companies that already have such entrenched power, they're going to be the ones that get to set the price for those fast lane speeds, right? And so they're going to be the ones that are actually going to come out on top with net neutrality. But it's hard to imagine that these companies would have been able to go anywhere if they didn't have net neutrality, if they didn't have, you know, kind of equal access to consumers that all other websites had when they started off.
And here's Decker, our next call. Good morning.
Good morning. I actually have two questions. One, can the existing ruling from the Supreme Court be allowed to be used by multiple states to band together for the same net neutrality standard? And second, to piggyback off the comment about the Montana governor, can the executive action by, say, the governor of California be used to force internet companies getting state contracts to cover rural areas in the state?
Both good legal questions. Can you shed some light here, Abigail? Let's start with the Supreme Court's role.
Sure. So, I mean, to be clear, this was a federal appeals court that ruled yesterday. And when it comes to states banding together, you know, Scott Wiener, who was on the line previously, made a really good point. And that is that most of these states actually are asking for pretty much the same thing, you know, except that California goes a lot further. So, you know, I don't see, and I'm not sure exactly how states would necessarily band together on this, except that state attorneys generals did band together to sue the FCC. But without a doubt, it seems like they all kind of want the same thing, or definitely want the same thing, which is a level playing field in their state when it comes to internet businesses. Now, when it comes to providing more access across the state of California, there are a lot of, you know, political levers that could be pulled there and different forms of pressure that could be applied. And it's something that we absolutely should be asking our lawmakers to prioritize.
And what about the caller's question about executive order from the governor, for example?
I'm not sure if there's been an executive order for the governor when it comes to increasing internet access across the state, but it's certainly a problem throughout California and many places with large rural populations where it's very hard to find reliable internet access.
And a question from Greg. What are your thoughts on Chattanooga, Tennessee municipal internet? I should mention the city of Chattanooga actually became an internet service provider, and since then the city has become a pretty thriving tech hub.
Yeah, you know, this is a fantastic example of a city taking it into its own hands to become a broadband service provider, to become a utility. And a number of smaller municipalities have done this across the country to much success. And it's something that the FCC has tried to limit at different points. But we do know that this is that cities can actually step in and be a competitor to Comcast, to AT&T. And, you know, when there's more players in the market, then they compete for price. They compete for better service. They compete for privacy. All of these things that can really, you know, benefit consumers in many ways. The Chattanooga example is fascinating because they actually are providing gigabit service. They're providing faster service than ISPs provide for the most part across the country. And it really shows that when we think about the internet as a utility, as a way, as actually infrastructure that we need in order for the city to operate, that the city can provide fantastic service.
Talking about a federal appeals court decision just yesterday that upheld the FCC's repeal of Obama-era net neutrality laws, but California protections may indeed stand because of the state part of that decision, which was separate from the federal. Let me get another caller aboard here, and that's you, Gigi. Good morning.
Yes.
Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. My question is, how do they get away with saying the internet is not a public utility through the airwaves, when particularly the government itself now has IRS forms, Social Security, everything's online. And so to not make it mandatory that it is a utility just does not compute. I think it's a total scam.
You know, and I'd add to that list, you know, homework in public schools across the country. The census is, going to be pushed and encourage people to file that online. Essential emergency information during hurricanes and tornadoes. You know, we get that information online. And you're absolutely right that people need access to the internet, and they need access to reliable internet that's not going to be wrongfully throttled. And one thing that the
we haven't even talked about throttling. That's a whole subject in and of itself.
Yeah, well, one thing that the appeals court did reaffirm is that the FCC needs to ensure that emergency services are protected. And that was really underlined by a case that happened in Santa Clara County last year when their fire department found that their internet connection had been throttled with Verizon, and it was an internet connection that they needed in order to it was a kind of a basic data service that they needed to communicate with their teams.
April Glazer, always good to have you with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for bringing clarity to this. And again, if you'd like to continue this discussion, we certainly recommend that you do that. You can go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and keep your thoughts going. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, an hour is repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. Remind you, you can always let us know what you think about what you hear on Forum or would like to hear on Forum by emailing us, forum@kqed.org. And we'll be back with you if all goes according to plan tomorrow. Stay tuned for more on this radio station. You're listening to KQED Public Radio in San Francisco and the Bay Area. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.